This episode is brought to you by Aspire Healthy Energy. Find them at aspiredrinks.com. If you're like me, you want energy that actually feels good without the sugar crash or the jittery buzz that comes with most energy drinks. That's why I love Aspire. With 80 milligrams of natural caffeine from green tea and guarana, about half the caffeine of most leading energy drinks, Aspire delivers smooth, steady energy that lasts. No jitters, no crashes. Plus, it's zero sugar and zero calories, and packed with B and C vitamins, biotin, and ginger to support your focus and metabolism. The flavors are seriously good. Mango, lemonade, raspberry, sweet cherry. You'll actually look forward to cracking one open. And here's the best part. I've arranged an exclusive deal for my listeners. You get 20% off your entire order. This is the highest discount out there, and you cannot find it anywhere else. Just go to aspireenergydrinks.com and use my promo code ZEROSIGNAL at checkout, or click the link in the show notes where the discount is applied automatically. That's aspiredrinks.com. Promo code ZEROSIGNAL. Fuel your day the healthier way.
You're tuned into Zero Signal, a show about what they won't say and what you're probably already thinking. No fluff. No filters, no bullshit. Let's crack it open.
At this time, I'm going to ask you to fasten your seatbelts.
Tonight on Zero Signal, we're going to start with a headline that sounds like it fell out of some alternative timeline: the capture of Nicolas Maduro, the president of Venezuela. A man the United States has spent years sanctioning, indicting, threatening, and isolating. Suddenly in custody. Suddenly on a plane. Suddenly facing an American courtroom. On the surface, this sounds simple. Bad guy finally gets grabbed. Justice system does its thing. Roll credits. But nothing about Maduro or Venezuela has ever been simple. The closer you get to the story, the more it stops looking like law enforcement. It starts looking like a move on a geopolitical chessboard. One where the pieces are oil, cocaine, migration, and alliances with countries that don't exactly send the White House Christmas cards. So tonight we're going to talk about what this capture means, what it took to pull off, and why there are a lot of people whispering that Maduro might not be the only target.
Last night, on the order of the President of the United States and in support of a request from the Department of Justice, as the President said, the United States military conducted an apprehension mission in Caracas, Venezuela, to bring to justice two indicted persons, Nicolas and Cecilia Maduro. This operation, known as Operation Absolute Resolve, was discreet, precise, and conducted during the darkest hours of January 2nd, and was the culmination of months of planning and rehearsal, an operation that, frankly, only the United States military could undertake. What I'd like to do this morning is talk to you through some of the preparation and the details without compromising any of our tactics, techniques, and procedures. There is always a chance that we'll be tasked to do this type of mission again. Our interagency work began months ago and built on decades of experience of integrating complex air, ground, space, and maritime operations. While the past two decades have honed the skills of our special operations forces, this particular mission required every component of our joint force, with soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Guardians working in unison with our intelligence agency partners and law enforcement teammates in an unprecedented operation. We leveraged our unmatched intelligence capabilities and our years of experience in hunting terrorists. And we could not have done this mission without the incredible work by various intelligence agencies, including the CIA, NSA, and NGA. We watched, we waited, we prepared, we remained patient and professional. This mission was meticulously planned, drawing lessons from decades of missions over the last many years, This was an audacious operation that only the United States could do. It required the utmost of precision and integration within our joint force. And the word integration does not explain the sheer complexity of such a mission. An extraction so precise, it involved more than 150 aircraft, launching across the Western Hemisphere in close coordination, all coming together in time and place to layer effects for a single purpose: to get an interdiction force into downtown Caracas while maintaining the element of tactical surprise. Failure of one component of this well-oiled machine would have endangered the entire mission, and failure is never an option for America's joint force. Those in the air over Caracas last night were willing to give their lives for those on the ground and in the helicopters. Let me talk a little bit about the preparation. After months of work by our intelligence teammates to find Maduro and understand how he moved, where he lived, where he traveled, what he ate, what he wore, what were his pets, in early December, our force was set pending a series of aligned events. Key was choosing the right day to minimize the potential for civilian harm and maximize the element of surprise and minimize the harm to the indicted personnel, so as the president said, they could be brought to justice. And as the president said earlier today, weather in Venezuela is always a factor this time of the year. And over the weeks through Christmas and New Year's, the men and women of the United States military sat ready, patiently waiting for the right triggers to be met and the president to order us into action. Last night, the weather broke just enough, clearing a path that only the most skilled aviators in the world could maneuver through: ocean, mountain, low cloud ceilings. But when tasked with a mission, this organization does not quit. At 10:46 p.m. Eastern time last night, the president ordered the United States military to move forward with this mission. He said to us, and we appreciate it, Mr. President, good luck and Godspeed. And those words were transmitted to the entire joint force. Over the course of the night, aircraft began launching from 20 different bases on land and sea across the Western Hemisphere. In total, more than 150 aircraft, bombers, fighters, intelligence, reconnaissance, surveillance, rotary wing were in the air last night. Thousands and thousands of hours of experience were airborne. Our youngest crew member was 20, and our oldest crew member was 49, and they're simply no match for American military might. As the night began, the helicopters took off with the extraction force, which included law enforcement officers, and began their flight into Venezuela at 100 feet above the water. As they approached Venezuelan shores, the United States began layering different effects provided by SPACECOM, CYBERCOM, and other members of the interagency to create a pathway. Overhead, those forces were protected by aircraft from the United States Marines, the United States Navy, the United States Air Force, and the Air National Guard. The force included F-22s, F-35s, F-18s, EA-18s, E-2s, B-1 bombers, and other support aircraft, as well as numerous remotely piloted drones. As the force began to approach Caracas, the joint air component began dismantling and disabling the air defense systems in Venezuela, employing weapons to ensure the safe passage of the helicopters into the target area. The goal of our air component is, was, and always will be to protect the helicopters and the ground force and get them to the target and get them home. As the force crossed the last point of high terrain where they'd been hiding in the clutter, we assessed that we had maintained totally the element of surprise. As the helicopter force ingressed towards the objective at low level, we arrived at Maduro's compound at 1:01 a.m. Eastern Standard Time or 2:01 a.m. Caracas local time, and the apprehension force descended into Maduro's compound and moved with speed, precision, and discipline towards their objective and isolated the area to ensure the safety and security of the ground force while apprehending the indicted persons. On arrival into the target area, the helicopters came under fire, and they replied with that fire with overwhelming force in self-defense. One of our aircraft was hit, but remained flyable. And as the president said earlier today, all of our aircraft came home, and that aircraft remained flyable during the rest of the mission. As the operation unfolded at the compound, our air and ground intelligence teams provided real-time updates to the ground force, ensuring those forces could safely navigate the complex environment without unnecessary risk. The force remained protected by overhead tactical aviation. Maduro and his wife, both indicted, gave up and were taken into custody by the Department of Justice, assisted by our incredible U.S. military with professionalism and precision, with no loss of U.S. life.
Let's start by rewinding the tape. Venezuela wasn't always the cautionary tale you see in cable news B-roll. For a long time, it was an oil-rich success story of South America. Huge reserves, big promises, and enough petrodollars flowing to build a kind of 21st century socialism under Hugo Chavez. When Chavez died in 2013, his chosen heir, Nicolas Maduro, slid into that chair. Bus driver turned into union leader, turned foreign minister, turned president. On paper, it looks like a working class success story. In reality, he inherited a system already cracking, corruption baked in, oil money mismanaged, and a government that had learned to survive by crushing opposition instead of fixing problems. Under Maduro, the wheels didn't just wobble, they came off. Hyperinflation, empty shelves, electric blackouts, millions of people walking out of the country on foot. If you've ever seen those images of Venezuelans carrying everything they own in a backpack and crossing into Colombia by the thousands, you've seen the human side of Maduro's rule. Now put yourself in Washington's shoes. Here, this regime turning into a narco state right in your hemisphere. It's accused of letting military officers and insiders run a cartel known as the Cartel of the Suns. It's tied into cocaine routes, moving product from Colombia through Venezuela out to Europe and the United States. In 2020, the U.S. Department of Justice actually indicts Maduro on narco-terrorism and drug trafficking charges and offers a huge reward for information leading to his arrest. That alone is wild. You're putting a sitting head of state on the same legal shelf as cartel bosses and terrorists. So when people say the U.S. would never go into another country and grab a leader, they forget something. We've done this before. Manuel Noriega in Panama. Operation Just Cause. The message was clear. If you're both running a country and running dope, don't assume that presidential sash is a force field. So when the story breaks that Maduro has been captured, that he's on his way to or already sitting in a courtroom, you have to ask this question. Is this the natural end of that 2020 indictment or something else? We're supposed to believe that after years where he couldn't be touched, it suddenly all comes together. An operation we're told is clean, surgical, almost boring in its efficiency. Maybe it's an extradition dressed up as diplomacy. A neighboring country quietly hands him over after an internal power struggle. Maybe it's a jet diverted on the strength of sealed warrants behind the scenes pressure. Maybe it's something darker, a red edition that never makes the front page in full detail. Whatever version you're being fed, understand one thing. To get a sitting president out of his own security bubble and into foreign custody, you need more than just good intel. You need insiders. That's the first conspiracy pressure point. This doesn't happen without someone close to Maduro either breaking, flipping, or deciding he's more valuable as a bargaining chip than a boss. Could mean a military faction that's tired of being tied to sanctions or narco-trafficking allegations. It could mean a rival insider, the ruling party who sees his moment to step into the vacuum. Or, and this is where it gets interesting, it could mean a deal, safe passage and money for one circle, handcuffs and headlines for the man on top. If you're the United States and you wanted Maduro for years, you don't wait for a miracle. You engineer the conditions for one. Now, add in a second layer. This isn't just about one country and its leader. Look at who Maduro has been getting close with. See, while Washington has been tightening the screws, Iran, Russia, to a lesser extent, China and Turkey, when your economy is sanctioned to death and Western banks won't touch you, you go to whoever's willing to do business in the shadows. That has meant Iranian fuel shipments when Venezuela's own refineries were falling apart. It's meant flights and cargo links that Western intel agencies watched very carefully because they weren't always convinced it was just for food or spare parts for those planes. It meant long-running accusations that Venezuela became a friendly space for Hezbollah-linked networks to move money, launder profits, and stage logistics in Latin America. It's meant Russian strategic bombers landing in Venezuela back in the late 2010s as a way to send a message that Moscow has friends in America's backyard. Put yourself into the mindset of people who write threat assessments for a living. You don't just see Maduro
Maduro as a corrupt leader running a broken state. You see a gateway. You see a regime willing to trade access for survival, access to ports, airspace, passports, banks, whatever keeps the lights on in the presidential palace for more than 1 year. Iran looking for places to extend its reach to the Western Hemisphere, whether through diplomatic missions, cultural centers, or shell companies. You see Russia, under sanctions of its own, trying to create pressure points close to U.S. territory. You start to ask, is Venezuela just failing, or is it being turned into a platform? Now ask the forbidden question. If that's how the government sees it, is this capture really about cocaine and corruption, or is it about breaking an alliance? Venezuela under Maduro is viewed as a bridge between Iran, Russia, and networks that scare counter-terror analysts, Hezbollah, Quads Force, Russian security contractors. Then removing him isn't just a legal victory. It's a regime change by indictment. It's decapitation of a node in a larger network. That's how special operations and intelligence people talk when they're being honest. You don't just remove individuals, you remove links in a chain. There's another historical pattern here that's uncomfortable to talk about. When the United States has a problem it can't solve with normal diplomacy, it does two things at once. It tells a clean story to the public and runs a messier one underneath. With Noriega, the clean story was dictator, drug trafficker, menace to democracy, so we had to go in. The messy story was about bases, shipping lanes, and who controls the canal. With Saddam Hussein, the clean story was weapons of mass destruction and liberating Iraq. The message story was oil, regional balance, and a long list of unfinished business from the 1990s. With Maduro, the clean story now is something like narco-dictator finally held accountable, justice for the Venezuela people. The messy story has more to do with who gets to set the rules in the Western Hemisphere, Washington and its allies, or a coalition that includes Moscow and Tehran. Here's where the conspiracy angle deepens. What if Maduro isn't the real end goal at all, but a lever? Think about what a man in his position knows. Internal ledgers, off-the-book deals, intelligence shared from his partners, conversations with Russians or Iranian envoys that we're never supposed to see in daylight. If you get him into a position where he's staring down decades in an American prison, you have an incentive to lean on him, not just for criminal, but as a source. You don't even have to parade that part in front of the cameras. The official story is we want justice. The off-the-record story is tell us how the network works. Tell us how money flows from South America cocaine labs into the Middle Eastern front companies. Tell us what generals are double-dipping, which bankers moved which billions, which foreign agents you met, and what they promised you. In that scenario, Maduro isn't just a trophy, he's a hard drive. Now flip it around. If you're Iran or Russia watching this happen, what do you see? You see the Americans proving they're still willing to reach into another country and physically remove a leader they've labeled an enemy. You see all other partners, people you deal with in Africa, Asia, Latin America, suddenly wondering if their turn is next. You see a president that creates pressure to respond, not necessarily with a big obvious missile launch, but with asymmetrical moves, cyber attacks, sabotage, using proxies. If you believe that Maduro's capture was less about just more about dismantling a loose network, then you also have to believe that the alliance won't just shrug and walk away. Let's zoom back into Venezuela for a moment, because there's a human cost here that never fully makes it into the headlines. When you remove a strong man from a fragile system, you don't automatically get peace and democracy. Sometimes you get a power vacuum. You get factions behind the scenes maneuvering to become the next Maduro, but with a better PR team. You get military officers who suddenly don't know whether their safest move is staying loyal or flipping sides. You get opposition leaders who have spent years trying not to get killed, now being dangled offers they can't entirely trust from foreign capitals that have their own agendas. You get regular people, teachers, nurses, shop owners, kids, who just want a stable currency and the lights to stay on, suddenly living through another round of uncertainty. If you believe that Maduro's capture is the beginning of Venezuela's healing, that's one narrative. If you believe it's the opening chapter of something more chaotic, that's another. Here's where the timing question comes in. Why now? Maduro has been under sanctions and indictment for years. The economic collapse isn't new. The exodus of refugees isn't new. The cocaine rounds aren't new. So what changed? One theory is that his value to his foreign backers started to drop. Foil deals were delivering what they promised. If he was seen as too toxic, too erratic, maybe he became expendable, a bargaining chip to trade for sanctions relief or guarantees. Another theory is that the alliances themselves crossed a line that Washington wasn't willing to tolerate. Perhaps intelligence started to indicate not just political support from Iran and Russia, but actual military cooperation in ways that turned Venezuela to more than an economic partner, more like a staging point. When you combine that with ongoing worries about Hezbollah and other proxy networks using Latin America as a back office, suddenly the risk calculation shifts. A leader who was once annoying but manageable becomes an unacceptable risk. There's also the domestic angle in the United States. You cannot ignore the political value of a dramatic foreign victory when things at home are brittle. Polarization, economic anxiety, mistrust in institutions. Putting a foreign villain in handcuffs on TV is a way to project strength across party lines. If you're a political facing a tough election or a messy news cycle, announcing the capture of someone you've spent years calling a narco-terrorist dictator is a great way to change that subject. That doesn't mean the operation is fake. It means the decision of when and how to pull the trigger on that operation is never purely about the target. It's about the audience. Now, let's talk about the court part, because that's where the story gets both legal and symbolic. When you haul a foreign president into an American courtroom, you're doing more than prosecuting him. You're sending a message to every head of state who has ever thought, as long as I stay inside my borders, I'm untouchable. You're saying, we don't see this as politics. We see this as a crime. Conspiracy angle here is subtle. Once we normalize that ideal, where does it stop? Today, it's Maduro and narco-terrorism. Tomorrow could be a different leader accused of cyber attacks or human rights abuses or financial crimes. There's a version of the future where U.S. courts become kind of a global tribunal whenever Washington decides someone crossed that line. That sounds great if you trust the people drawing the lines. It sounds a lot less great if you watch those lines shift depending on whose interests are at stake. Some people will say, look, this is overthinking it. Maduro is a corrupt dictator, ruined his country, worked with cartels, cozied up to hostile regimes. Of course he should face justice. And there's truth in that. But Zero Signal isn't about accepting the press release version and calling it a night. It's about asking what has to be true in the background for the headline to exist. In this case, for Maduro to be captured and sent to court, you need high-level cooperation from at least one neighboring country, a faction without its own system willing to sell him out, a green light from the people in Washington who know exactly how dangerous the president this sets, and the confidence that they can handle whatever blowback comes next. That's a lot of moving pieces, and none of them move without deeper motives. There's one more thread I want to tug on before we start landing this plane. Think about information. For years, the Venezuelan government has been accused of using disinformation, propaganda, and censorship to keep control. But if Maduro is in custody, if he's being interrogated, if his devices and documents are being analyzed, that flow of information suddenly reverses. Secrets start to move outward instead of inward. Things that were brushed off as conspiracy theories about his foreign partners might suddenly look a lot less theatrical when they show up in court exhibits or leaked transcripts. Where if you're more cynical, only the secrets that are useful to certain agendas will see the light of day, while others stay locked in classified annexes forever. Either way, the capture of a leader like Maduro doesn't just change who runs a country, it changes who owns the narrative. So where does this leave us? On paper, this is a story about a narco dictator finally facing justice after years of abusing power, wrecking an economy, and aligning with regimes who want to undermine the U.S. In practice, it's a story about what happens when law enforcement, intel, and geopolitics fuse into the same system. Was this operation about protecting Americans from drugs and terror? Was it about snapping a link in a chain that runs from Caracas to Moscow to Tehran? Was it about domestic political theater? Or is it, in the most unsettling version, all of the above at once? That's the part that most people don't want to look at. Possibly that logical, rational motives and opportunities, self-serving opportunities, can coexist inside the same decision. As always, I'm not here to tell you what to think. I'm here to walk you around the edges of the story and show you the parts that don't fit neatly into the official script. Maduro's capture and trial became real fixtures of our news cycle. You'll hear 1,000 pundits talk about what it means for democracy, for the rule of law, and for the free world. What you won't hear as often is the quiet worry in the background. If we can reach across borders and take him, who else is fair game? How does his former friends respond? And what happens to the millions of people in Venezuela who are about to live through yet another new beginning designed not by them, but for them? Tonight, if you're listening to this, I'm not asking you to panic or go full doomer. That never helps. I'm asking you to do what we always talk about on this show. Live in that yellow zone of awareness. Pay attention to the connections. Notice when the narrative shifts from justice to strategy without anyone admitting it out loud. Maybe ask yourself a personal question. If powerful people can rewrite the fate of a country with an operation in a courtroom, what can you still control in your own life, your community, your situational awareness, your ability to separate signal from noise? That's yours for now. This has been Zero Signal. However this story plays out, stay safe, stay curious, and stay in that thin line between fear and denial. That's where the truth usually hides.
We've hit the 0 hour. That's a wrap on this week's transmission. New episodes drop weekly, so stay tuned and don't miss the next signal. Follow, subscribe, and spread the word. You've been listening to Zero Signal. We're out.